Okay. So, little disclaimer before we even get started here. This is the 111 Redux episode brought to you 1 week later. We didn't wait a whole year and a half to recover an episode like we did last time with the Based on a True Story episode. Episode 111 had some strange and just completely unfilterable, I don't know if it was feedback or just
interference in general.
Yeah, something, and it was random, and I couldn't squelch it, so I had to trash it. So I have gotten several emails explaining to me that the episode that previously released, episode 112,
threw everybody's scheduling off.
Yeah, it actually messed up people's holiday plans because they thought it was December instead of the end of November. So we are going to just present this as it was intended with clean audio. And so without further ado, I'm going to hit the music and we're going to start the show. Everybody, it is November 26, 2018, and this is episode 111 of the Scary Dad Podcast, in which we will discuss real life haunted houses. That's it. So we got quite a bit to talk about today, so without further ado,
first the old business.
Awesome. All right, on this date in 1476, Vlad the Impaler defeats, Bascarab Leota with the help of Stephen the Great and Stephen V.E. Bathory, and becomes ruler of Wallachia for the third time. Stephen V. was a direct ancestor to Elizabeth Bathory, the Blood Countess, so it's kind of interesting that she and Vlad the Impaler actually have a bit of a link there.
Right.
But that would be an interesting day. That would be kind of a messed up team up. That's something like out of the comics, right?
Right.
So let's see. On this date in 1778, Captain James Cook becomes the first European to visit Maui in Hawaii. In 1789, the first Thanksgiving Day was proclaimed by Washington. In 1863, Lincoln proclaimed November 26th as Thanksgiving on the fourth Thursday of every year. 1917, the National Hockey League is formed. Teeth around the world shudder. All right, 1922, Howard Carter and Lord Carnarvon become the first people to enter the tomb of Tutankhamun in 3,000 years.
King Tut.
Steve Martin. I mean, how do you write a song like that? You sit down, you got your notepad and your pencil, and you're like... and that's what you come up with. All right. 1922 was the first general release of a two-tone Technicolor movie. It was called The Toll of the Sea. 40 years later, 1942, Casablanca premieres in New York, and it's still in black and white.
Yep.
So I guess that two-color Technicolor didn't take hold quite yet. And in 1976... Anarchy in the UK is released, signaling the arrival of punk rock by the fake boy band, the Sex Pistols. I just can't... Anarchy in the UK is an actually pretty good album, but just trips me out whenever it's like, oh, we're so anti-establishment, but yet you were created by a fashion designer for the purpose of...
selling records.
Yeah, of selling clothes.
Yeah.
Not even selling records, selling clothes. Anyway, interesting. Notable births on this date in 1922. Charles Schulz of Peanuts fame. So he's the one that brought us the Chateau.
The Chateau.
And the Great Pumpkin.
And all the other holiday specials and everything else.
1938, comedian Rich Little. You don't hear much about anymore. No. He was really big when I was a kid.
He was huge.
Remember, like, Scooby-Doo used to have, like, the strangest
guest stars. Yeah, guest stars.
And, you know, of course, they'd have, like, Batman and Robin. That sort of made sense, but then they'd have Phyllis Diller. And you're like, who's this dude?
I used to love when Scatman Crothers would show up. And the Harlem Globetrotter episodes were money.
Yeah, those good stuff.
Do you remember the Harlem Globetrotters cartoon?
What?
Where they're superheroes and the one with the afro would pull, like, a ladder. His afro and shit.
Yeah, there's all kinds of crazy cartoons when you're a kid. You know what? You know what's interesting?
Have
you
all seen, use the same voices.
Yeah. Well, have you seen the new She-Ra? No. Or have you at least seen the stills from it?
Nope.
So, there's a new She-Ra cartoon that recently hit on Netflix. And, you know, my girls have watched it. It's not horrible, but it's one of those just kind of like girl power, whatever. Well, in this one, she's quite a bit younger. It's kind of drawn in almost an anime sort of a look.
Mm-hmm.
But its drawing is not wonderful, okay? It's kind of simple. It's simplistic compared to the old.
Yeah.
And, you know, people were arguing on the internet because this She-Ra's younger, and so her outfit isn't as revealing as the old She-Ra's was, that was kind of more like a Barbie doll.
Mm-hmm.
And they were arguing about the dress, and I was looking at the pictures like side by side, and I was like, it's not the dress that's the problem here. The problem here is that Filmation, if you remember watching He-Man and or She-Ra, that was basically like 8 frames of animation that they repeated. They were so cheap. So they got the cheapest animators and the cheapest artists that they could do, and they recycled everything a billion times.
They
drew
it one time and use it again, right.
And if this looks cheap compared to that, then you know they didn't put no money into it. But, yeah, it's just kind of weird how, you know, obviously all the reboots, but, you know, Hanna-Barbera. Like, I remember reading a thing saying, like, the animation on, I don't know, was it G.I. Joe? Something they were trying real hard to make it look modern as opposed to the Hanna-Barbera that was kind of cheap. And it was not He-Man. That was not one of those ones they're trying to make look good.
Right.
They're just like, make a 30-minute long commercial. All right, this date in 1939. Tina Turner.
My mom loved that woman.
All right, let's see. 1926, we lost John Browning. Notable deaths. Browning formed the Browning Weapons Company.
Yeah.
And, all kinds of wonderful, wonderful apparatus for slinging lead across fields. Got to rapid fire my AK this weekend.
Awesome, dude.
Then I accidentally touched the barrel. Yeah.
It wasn't very wise.
Well, it was not a conscious act.
Okay.
I was holding on to the stock, and I went to put it down, and whenever I laid it up like that, my finger slipped a little bit and barely touched.
Just a bunch of explosions just went through that metal. So
yeah, and it was let's just say it was not soothing. But yeah, it was pretty cool.
It's fun.
Yeah, I've been waiting to rapid fire that thing since I got it. So I'm just like recoil kind of takes away your trigger finger though. It's like kind of goes up
right.
On you. All right, and then notable deaths in this date in 2005. We lost Stan Berenstain, half of the Stan and Jan Berenstain, who made the Berenstain Bears. And with that, that has been old business for this date in real history, November 26th, episode 111. And we'll be right back with the new business.
Sega challenges you with the ultimate video game. The Sega Master System.
Hang on, hang on!
with more accurate control, more detailed graphics, more levels of play.
Awesome!
The Sega Master System comes with power-based two control pads, light phaser, and two great video games. Hang on and Safari Hunt.
Gotcha!
And with other games like Rambo, Outrun, and Choplifter, the excitement never stops. The Sega Master System. The challenge will always be there.
The house looks just like the one next to it. And the one next to that. And the one next to that. A young couple live in it.
Give Ken a kiss.
You are so obnoxious!
With their three children.
Of course, you have to chew each bite 10 times.
And something more.
Sweetie, remember last night? Do you remember when you woke up and you said you're here?
Uh-huh.
Well, who did you meet? Who's here?
TV people.
Something funny going on here next door. Something,
We were wondering if maybe you had experienced any disturbances lately.
What kind of disturbances?
I don't know whatever's over this house.
Spielberg crosses a frightening new threshold into a world within our own. Its form is revealed.
What is it?
Its focus is clear. And the games are over. Poltergeist. It knows what scares you.
All right, we're back.
All right. You want to get through our recent deaths first?
Yeah, should we let Gomez intro?
Yes, of course.
New business is new business, and this is new business.
All right.
Open a can. We got some toasts.
Got a few of them. Yeah. First off, we got Julie Strain, screen queen, extraordinaire, Playboy model.
She's not gone yet, but she's in hospice. Soon to pass.
Former wife of Kevin Eastman, former girlfriend of Kevin Eastman. She's going to be passing soon. That's crazy to think, because you know she never aged really.
Well, she had early onset dementia.
Yeah.
Which is not, it's no joke. Yep. I mean, it's bad, but so I mean, I just remember like in the 90s, she was on the cover of every magazine.
Oh, yeah,
she was in like Cinema Fantastique and Heavy Metal specifically, yep. And Starlog and Fangoria.
Well, at that time, Kevin Eastman was the editor of Heavy Metal magazine, so mm-hmm. Yeah, she was on several covers. Boom just got a bunch of Simon Bisley covers of Julie Strain signed and everything. Remember the Julie Strain action figure he used to have? He bought that and had Bisley sign it also. Yeah, she was everywhere at one time, man.
Yeah, just Scream Queen extraordinaire. Oh, and yeah. That whole, like, B-movie, you know, trauma films. Just so much horror and pop
independent
culture,
film,
independent film stuff. And she was good too. She was pretty, and she was charismatic.
She was tall. She was. She set herself apart from everybody else. She didn't have blonde hair. She had dark black hair, which you know wasn't the norm, so to speak. But yeah, she. Unfortunately, she is going to be passing soon. We'll be losing her for sure. Next, one of the actors from Friday the 13th series, Mr. Dominic Brascia, who was one of the characters named Joey in Friday the 13th, A New Beginning. He has passed away. Currently, he was working as a host on AM 1450 in Montana. And Radio Station Reports is with deep sadness. We report our morning show host, Dominic Brascia, has passed away. Died of natural causes over the weekend, 62 years old. Each morning on his show, Dominic in the Morning, Brascia blended news and politics mixed with a heavy dose of opinion from himself and his loyal listeners in the Gallatin Valley area. So, yeah, so we have lost him as well.
And if you don't remember who he was on Friday the 13th, he was the kid with the candy bar who was kind of antagonizing the axe, the guy with the axe.
Yeah.
And he was Roy Burns' son who gets killed, and that's what ends up turning Roy into Jason. Yeah. So, which, you know, we've talked, we did a whole episode on that particular movie out of the series. That one had a deep effect on me. That was probably the first one I actually saw that I knew that I was watching it, a Friday the 13th movie. Mm-hmm. But that's the one, I think that came out in 85. Yeah, that's the one where I used to sit, you know, like, actually, no, that was the first one we rented. We got my parents to rent that for me. Me and my cousin and my buddies watched it, and it scared the bejesus out of me. And so, yeah, that movie always has a special place in my heart. I don't care about Scooby-Doo Jason. Hashtag Blue Chevrons.
Talking it's to a you, good movie, man.
Talking to you, Boom. But, no, I mean, those, you know, those series have so many people that contributed to them that it's inevitable that you're going to lose some from time to time. But mm-hmm. every now, you know, like whenever, you know, just kind of some random actor or actress from the Friday series, you're like, oh, man.
I remember that. Yeah. It holds a part of nostalgia with you when you're a big fan of the series. So. And finally, we lost the creator of SpongeBob SquarePants. And unfortunately, his last name is escaping me right now. It was Stephen...
Hilderman?
It was Hilderman or something like that. But he has passed away also at a very young age, actually. He was in his 50s. And we lost him also. SpongeBob is a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah, he had ALS.
Yeah.
Lou Gehrig's disease. And a friend of ours, aunt got that. And... it's devastating. I mean, it's just, it's really quick and really debilitating. So you kind of feel yourself falling apart.
Right.
It's not good.
I was going to mention message Top Kenny about it. I haven't talked to him since the wildfires and everything a couple of weeks ago. I had talked to him a little bit, but you know, I'm sure everybody involved with the program is heartbroken at his passing. So,
mm-hmm.
like I said, SpongeBob is huge. And it's not going anywhere, you know.
And SpongeBob is one of those things that I don't even remember it coming out. I just remember it
being
kind
there.
Of always just being there.
Yeah.
And it's been around for years.
Yep.
And he was so young that it's just like, wait, what?
Yeah, it's been around probably a good 15 years for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Yeah, so we lost that. Let's brighten the mood a little bit. Let's go to Cleveland, Ohio. Why don't we? Or the suburbs of Cleveland. Some guests arrived at an Applebee's. About 20 people, if I'm not mistaken. To celebrate a gender reveal party. The gender reveal parties are ridiculous to begin with, in my personal humble opinion.
Well, the last one you discussed burnt down the forest.
Burnt down, yeah, it was like 600,000 acres of land. There was a group of 20 showed up. And they set themselves up at the table. And I guess they... all of a sudden, a bunch of confetti poppers appeared. And that's how they were going to reveal the gender. Everybody's going to get a confetti popper, go ahead, pop it, and whatever color it is the baby. Well, staff noticed and said, hey, you guys, really, we can't pop those in here. You know, you're going to disturb the other guests. Would you guys mind going outside to do it? So the people were like, okay, cool. We'll go outside and do it. So they went ahead. They went outside, right outside the door, popped, and blue confetti popped out. So it's a boy. Mazel tov. So they go ahead and go back in, and they get stopped by the manager. And the manager said, whoa, would you guys mind cleaning up all the damn confetti you just threw all over everybody's cars? And it was at this point that the group decided to get rowdy. Partygoers started yelling and throwing menus at the employees. Some of the party members started screaming. Here's my favorite part. To the manager, they said, I'm going to beat your ass. And then someone apparently turned to the hostess. The poor hostess is just standing there trying to earn a buck. And said,
literally.
And said, I'm going to fuck you up. So the police were called whenever they left, and they realized that they hadn't paid the bill. So the police came in. They ended up being found and in charged with failure to pay. But yeah, it's a wild, wacky gender reveal parties. What's weird is it's a group of 20. Okay, guess what the bill was?
What was that?
$31. I'm assuming that it didn't last long. It probably got there.
They probably walked in there, ordered a couple of drinks, or maybe an appetizer, and they got kicked out. And they're like, oh, that's awesome.
Okay, Sony has announced that the Spider-Man universe is taking a new direction, and the Spider-Woman movie will soon be worked on. Studio is working on an animated Spider-Woman film that will focus on three generations of women with Spidey powers. One of these characters might be Spider-Gwen, they're saying, a breakout character from the Spider-Verse. This all builds on the buzz preceding the animated Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse series, starring, what is it, Mark Morales is his name? In the Spider-Verse. Is it?
Miles
Morales.
Miles Morales.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, so we'll be seeing Spider-Woman come to the stage, to this big screen, even though it'll be animated version, but it'll be something, a new little twist on everything.
The whole Spider-Gwen thing just got really stupid. Kind of like with Deadpool. Like, it just became a whole other, it's like, how many different skins can we put on this stupid character and have it kind of be funny? So you had, you know, like Spider-Gwen, and then like Thor-Gwen, or Gwen-Thor, yeah. And then, you know, Gwen-Pool, and it's like, it's like, okay, all you guys in the writing room.
It's enough mashups.
all you gotta do is write the word Gwen down and look around and be like, Gwen-Fence, and Gwen-Tree, and Gwen-Rinchime, and Gwen-Lights, and then just pass it off to an artist and say, draw this. It's not really all that clever, but whatever.
All right, let's go from a gender reveal party to a wedding outside of Arlington, Texas. Okay, couple's getting married. They decided to hire one Catherine Lee Mehta, 26, of Arlington, as their wedding photographer. Hey, we got a wedding photographer. Let's have fun. Wedding goes off without a hitch. Reception starts up. That's when things went crazy. Some of the guests, they ended up calling the police when some of the guests, they found Mehta having sex with one of the wedding guests in a side room of the reception hall, at which point she lost her mind, ran outside, and began pissing on a tree outside of the door of the reception hall. Don't know why she did that, but
she had to pee.
Continued yelling at people. She walked. She walked into a fountain. She just lost her mind. They're saying that she got arrested. Cops showed up, threw her in the car. She told the cops, "Y'all families will be dead by Christmas. Y'all's daughters are dead. My dad is going to find out about this, and y'all are all fucking dead." D-E-A-D. She added with emphasis. At the jail, during a search, they found a prescription bottle of Alprazolam, which should not be taken whenever you're drinking, because it will cause you to have sex with wedding guests and urinate on a tree.
See, when I first read that, I guess a little, I'm not dyslexic, but I was like, that can't possibly, it's like the man bites dog. It's like, okay, so basically, one of the wedding guests scored with the wedding photographer, so that's not too far outside the lines, and she pissed on a tree. Well, sometimes you gotta go. The headline would have been having sex with a tree and pissing on a guest. Like, it's, I got a buddy who's a photographer, and he's like, guys, I've seen this, stop sharing.
Okay, and one of the biggest stories that we've had as of late, which I'm sure you've read about, so we can discuss this a little bit, is a 26-year-old John Chalk, who was the self-proclaimed missionary and spreader of God's word.
He went and
who decided to go ahead and try to convert a very, very isolated and secluded tribe in the Indian Ocean to try to convert them to Catholicism. And he was immediately met with arrows. And instead of jumping back on his boat and taking off, he decided to go ahead and push a little further, and they ended up killing him.
Yep.
Some people have come out and said that they remember him talking about this tribe at one time, saying that he felt as though it was his life's mission to convert this tribe to Christianity. Why?
Mm.
You know, that's... And now, because of the law surrounding this tribe, where you're not supposed to disturb them, you know, they're supposed to remain isolated, they have no idea how they're going to get his body back. It's been buried on the beach by the tribe, and anybody that approaches that island is going to be shot by arrows. You know, this tribe is not supposed to have any contact by anybody according to law. It's illegal to go to that island.
Yeah.
And he was able to get some fishermen to kind of take him most of the way. Then he canoed on over and showed up with a football and a Bible.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, I've read about that isolated tribe before, and, like, they're no joke, man.
No, they were shooting arrows at a helicopter one time. Yeah, people went check on them after a tsunami to make sure they were still alive, and they were still there. Just, they've been surviving there for tens of thousands of years. They don't need anything.
They obviously they're okay.
Yeah,
like they're getting by. That dude's body might just have to be on the beach.
Right, and now his family have come out saying that. How do we know he's actually dead? There's only one witness that has said that they saw him shot and buried. No one else has come forward to say anything. And so they're actually holding on to hopes that he's still alive.
Maybe he is.
Yeah, but we'll never know.
We'll never know. Yeah. And you can't go over there and poke at him to see. I mean, I always wonder what would have happened if, like, you know, as Columbus's ships started approaching the beach, instead of like, hey, what's that? They just like... Everybody just shot a flaming arrow out there and just like, boom, burnt those ships. And you're like, okay, well, you know, who would have sent a search party? I mean, the crown of Spain financed that expedition. Right. They're not going to just willy-nilly send a couple more boats to see what happened. Right. They're just going to like, well, that guy never came back.
Yeah. You know? that one failed. Yes, and I've seen so much stuff. The tribe is called the Sentinelese. They're a tribe of hunter-gatherers. They do not want to be bothered by anybody. They're very aggressive. But the funniest story I've heard is some guy in his 70s went by the island. They were on a boat. They didn't actually go onto the island. And apparently, all of a sudden, the entire tribe started having sex on the beach. He describes it as all of a sudden one woman got with one warrior and they started doing it on the beach, then they all started pairing off, and once they were done they just stopped and walked back into the woods. But like I said, they've been there for so long, just leave them alone.
Yeah,
there's no need to bother them. And fortunately this guy decided he wanted to spread the word of Jesus Christ and save these people that didn't need saving, and he ended up getting killed. And he knew how dangerous they were.
Yeah,
it was well documented. That's
the
thing.
It's like the whole, that dude that got his leg ripped off by the sharks on National Geographic. It's like, they're bull sharks. They're dangerous.
Right.
It's like, well, I'm gonna trust them with my life. And then one takes a chunk off his leg, and it's like, honestly, shouldn't probably waste the gas driving you to the hospital, dumbass. Like,
and one last story. You've seen the movie WALL-E before, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you know how... It pretty much shows a sentient society where nobody moves. They just sit there and eat and get fat. You can't walk anymore. And, like, bone structure has changed where we've gotten a step closer to that reality. Someone has designed a chest-mounted robot arm that can feed you where you don't even have to move your arms to eat.
Hopefully this is for, like, disabled people.
Well, I think that's what it's meant for, but it's being tested by other folks too. The intention isn't to stuff till you explode, though. Ormondine is actually a prototype designed to augment the social experience of eating. A group in University of Australia and the Indian Institute of Information Technology Design have come up with this new robotic feeding arm that you wear like a shirt, and it just shoves food into your mouth, called the Ormondine. Yay.
For some reason I'm thinking of on The Simpsons when Homer goes to hell for eating the donut, the forbidden donut, and they're like, he's in the hall of ironic punishments. He's like, oh, so you like donuts so much? How about all the donuts? He's like, oh, oh,
oh. That's what I got. We can move on from there.
Rock and roll, man. Well, we'll take a break and come right back.
Are you hungry? Hungry as a gremlin? Here's gremlin cereal.
Gremlins, gremlins, bite after bite. What a tasty way to satisfy a gremlin appetite.
Gremlins is a deliciously sweet, crunchy cereal that satisfies the hungry little gremlin that's in all of us.
Gremlins, gremlins, bite after bite. What a tasty way to satisfy a gremlin appetite.
Gremlin cereal is part of this complete breakfast.
Gremlin, yum yum.
Mystic places, psychic phenomena, unnatural experiences. All sources of fascination and speculation. Now read Mystic Places, the book that helps unlock the secrets of the ages. What are the signs of a lost land reappearing? Was this an ancient spaceship runway used by aliens? Read Mystic Places, free for 10 days. Keep it for $12.99. Other volumes will follow from Mysteries of the Unknown, the Time Life series that sold over 2 million books.
All right, and we are back.
Yes, we are.
In which we're going to talk about some real-life haunted houses.
And haunted places. Just places where you can get your scare on if you want.
Scott's going to lead us off while I draw a smiley face on this leaf, if for no other reason than just mess with my kids.
All right, I'll leave us off. I think I can do that. Okay, this is one that we're both familiar with, but the Myrtle's Plantation in St. Francisville, Louisiana. Apparently, it's a very haunted place, and one of the spirits that are the main ones that haunt are a girl named Chloe. And the way the story goes, Chloe was a slave girl who worked for Mark and Sarah Woodruff at the plantation. According to the legend, Mark caught her eavesdropping on a private conversation between the owner of the plantation and some business associates. As a punishment, he had her ear cut off. After she recovered, she started wearing a green turban wrapped around her head to cover up the disfigurement. In retaliation, she baked a cake with boiled down extract of oleander, which is a poisonous plant, and served it to the Woodruffs. Her intent was to exact revenge on Woodruff and his wife, but Mark never ate the cake. Instead, the woman and her two daughters ate the cake and they immediately died. There are some doubts as to the veracity of this tale. Nonetheless, visitors and plantation staff alike report seeing the image of a young ghost girl wearing a green turban wandering the grounds at all hours of the night. But she's not alone either. It's believed there are as many as 12 different ghosts that haunt the plantation there. And growing up in Louisiana, I've always heard of the Myrtle's Plantation. It's a beautiful plantation area. Mm-hmm. You can visit it. They do tours there and everything. They don't allow overnight staying or anything like that.
I think they do. You can actually get bed and breakfast rooms.
Okay.
It's actually kind of funny because my buddy Dennis is from New Orleans, and so is his wife, and they live here in Houston. This was like years and years ago. And she's a real big horror buff, and him not so much. And then I'm a real big horror buff, and my wife not so much. So she was egging him on, and I was egging her on, my wife on, to come on, let's go do the Myrtles. Like, let's go out there, like, as a group, and we'll stay in the bed and breakfast, and we'll wander the whole property and stuff. My wife's a generally somewhat jealous person, like, you know, if I go out, or, but she looks at me and she's like, if you and her want to spend a night in the Myrtles, y'all go right ahead. Me and Dennis will go do something else. I'm like, do you realize what you just said? And she thought about it for a second. She's like, yes, I do. I'm like, I'm not going to go stay in a haunted place just for the hell of it. So I have not yet been there. So to say the least. But it is definitely on one of those road trip bucket lists. But
there's so many plantations in South Louisiana that have incredible ghost stories. The hometown I grew up in had Shadows of the Teche, which that one of the ghosts I remember hearing about as a child was it was owned by the Conricos, who owned the Conrico rice mill, and their son had died when he fell off the balcony of the upper floor, and his ghost is one of the ones that they say haunts the plantation. I've never seen any ghosts there, but I knew people that had. A lady I knew that worked for the Shadows, for the Historic Society in my hometown, she used to have several instances where she saw the ghost or just strange occurrences.
Heard it.
Yeah. Starting to think my new place is haunted, by the way.
Hell yeah?
Yeah. Amy's like convinced that it is. Just shit falls all night. shit falls. The other day, I didn't tell her about it. Actually, I lied to her about this because I didn't want to freak her out too bad. But the most recent one is we're laying in bed watching TV, and we hear just this loud rattling noise from downstairs, and I run on down, and I had a can of Pringles on the refrigerator, not on the edge, but it was on the floor in the kitchen. Yeah.
Just tumbled.
Yeah, somehow fell off of the top of the refrigerator. Nothing else was moved or anything, just that. And there were like all kind of things around it that it wasn't disturbed, just that Pringles can was on the floor.
There, I can't tell, man.
Yeah, you never know.
Might have a ghost raccoon.
Don't tell her that. She'll definitely want to leave. She'll be more afraid of that than she will of the damn ghost. I'm serious. She had seen the other day, she freaks out at like possums and rats and mice and stuff. And in the back, we have this huge patio, and there's a big couple big trees, like right. And the first thing she said, I better never come out here at night and see a possum in that tree. And yesterday, I was grilling chicken, and I walk out in the back, and I hear this ruffling around leaves, and I look through the fence, and there is a huge possum sitting right there, dude. So I ran it off. But yeah,
you live near any boondocks?
No. Next to us is like an open field, and there's a martial arts studio and stuff right there, but.
Because we live reservoir's right back there. So it's like open woods for miles and miles and miles. So we got all kinds of weird, crazy stuff over here sometimes. I mean, raccoons, they'll take your dog. They're big. But, yeah, somehow or another, just like seeing certain animals is scarier than seeing people. It's like, I can take a person. That animal might have rabies.
So what you got? Where are we going next?
Well, one that I've driven by, but I've never actually seen, but that's on that bucket list too, is the Winchester Mystery House in Sacramento. It's actually San Jose, California.
Subject of the recent movie?
Yeah, they made a movie about it. Like, this was one of those things when I was a kid and reading about mysterious places, like Time Life books or whatever. Always just seemed interesting because the whole concept behind it was so bizarre, in that Mrs. Winchester, she dreamed that she was being haunted by the ghosts of the people killed with Winchester rifles, and a medium told her that she had to just keep building on the house. So she built on the house forever until she died. And so you've got stairways that go to nothing, windows that open into brick walls that are facades for actual, there's rooms behind them. There's just so many strange things that just seems like the kind of place that obviously you could get lost in, but I mean, I could just lose myself in the history of that place. Wandering around,
The medium was probably the wife of a general contractor.
Probably.
And she said, here's a card for someone I know that can build as much as you want. Here
yeah. But yeah, they worked day and night building that thing. But you'd have to wonder after a while, you just run out of
things
space.
Things to do, right.
But she just put them on something else, like dig a hole and fill it, and dig a hole and fill it, and work on something to confuse the ghosts. And, she lived there while it was happening, too. So, I don't know. My initial thought, like, obviously, she's being haunted by the ghosts of her fortune, so to speak. But, you know, hey, if I'm in a haunted house, first thing I'm going to think is I'm going to move before I consider, get an exorcism or something.
If it's ghosts that want to hurt you.
Yeah.
You know, if they're knocking Pringles cans off the refrigerator, that's not a big deal. But if it's ghosts looking for retribution, then that's not a good thing. I've seen too many movies to know that doesn't end well.
The retribution ghosts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, one that I know we discussed, and you know a lot about this one, is the Ghost of Gettysburg. Which are...
I showed you that video.
Yeah, video, yeah.
That's pretty phenomenal right there.
Yeah, it is. But it's the battlefields in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, where the Battle of Gettysburg took place. It was the largest battle of the Civil War. Saw the largest number of casualties in the entire campaign. Today, the battleground is often cited as the most haunted place in America. No surprise, considering that thousands of soldiers died there from both sides of the conflict and they lost their lives. Visitors to Gettysburg often report sightings of ghost soldiers and even entire ghost battles being fought. And like I said, there's videos on YouTube that people have done out there where it's crazy, man.
Yeah, because you're not seeing like full-on ghosts. You're just seeing like wisps.
Yeah.
So it's kind of stuff that you're not really... It doesn't look like a Disney special effects. It really just looks like... like a wispy, smoky face just kind of in and out and then gone.
But it's pretty wicked. There's definitely some place that would be cool to visit, for sure.
You know, Gettysburg, these certain battlefields, I remember it was one of those things, like, we don't fight battles like that anymore. Like, the Civil War, like, World War I was the final, like, face-to-face, you know, hook bayonets and run at each other sort of battle. But before that, that's just how they did it. But my dad and my grandfather were, you know, real big in the Civil War, and I'd look at the maps in the books. It'll show like, oh, okay. So basically, you know, Robert E. Lee was making maneuvers and he was heading towards Washington. He's trying to take down the head of the Union, right?
Right.
And Gettysburg was where the Union Army was there. So my logical, like, 8, 9, 10-year-old brain was like, well, why wouldn't he just, like, go around that? Like, he just march around that giant army that's in his way and then, like, walk on into Washington and then win the war, right? Like,
capture the flag.
Like, instead of, like, let's stop here. Like, let's just keep on going for a while, and we'll stop somewhere else. And my dad would be like, "Well, that's just not how they did war back then." And I was like, "But he's like, you couldn't leave an enemy at your rear." I'm like, but it wouldn't matter because they would have the capital. it's like checkmate. It's like, well, mate, you might be giving up your queen, but hey, I just won the game. He's like, yeah. It's like, doesn't make any sense. It's like pretty much none of those battles, because you think of them facing each other on a field. You just be like, well, not going to, shoot enough of you to get away and, like, regroup so I can do some more damage somewhere else.
Right.
But it was, like, it was just etiquette. It was just the rules. That's just what they did.
The rules of engagement.
And it's like, man, that just seems like a, I mean, it is a giant waste of life anyway, but to just be like, well.
We got to do it this way.
They've got a superior force, but we're just going to walk right up to it because that's what we've always done. It's just like. Wow. Sure, I'm glad that's over. I'm not in the military or anything, but man. Can you imagine just being a normal soldier and being like, but if we just go on this side of the hill, don't even have to deal with this shit.
Right.
Oh, well. All right, let's see. One of the things that I would really like to see, again, road trip. It almost happened this year. We were talking about it, but we changed our
minds. I know where you're going.
The Stanley Hotel,
yep.
The Estes Park, Colorado. That is the setting and the scene of The Shining,
yes.
By Stephen King, in the book, not the Kubrick movie. The overlook in the Kubrick movie was a completely different structure.
Hotel. Right.
But the Stanley Hotel, the one that Stephen King wrote about, was it's kind of an interesting story. The podcast Lore has a whole big thing about it. But basically, the Stanley brothers were twins, and they were both tinkerers and inventors. And by the time they got old, they were both millionaires. And one of them got tuberculosis, I think it was tuberculosis, so he moved up to Colorado to, like, drier climes, and they built the hotel there. And, but since it's been built, so nothing evil happened out there.
Right.
You know, not the same as in The Shining. Like, everybody was pretty happy and stuff, but there's quite a few haunts. You know, people hear piano music, people hear, you know, see things in mirrors, they see and smell cigarette and cigar smoke. You know, the security cameras pick up movements and doors and stuff moving across hallways and stuff. And it just seems like, you know, it's something that freaked Stephen King himself out so much that he woke up and wrote The Shining,
yeah,
which is one of the most frightening stories told in the 20th century. So,
yeah. And there's plenty of YouTube videos that, in the hotel also, ghost hunters that have stayed in specific rooms where they the activity happens. And there's some pretty creepy shit that goes on in the hotel.
Yeah, so I'd really like to go hang out in the Stanley Hotel.
For sure. That would be a good one. Where are we going to go next?
One, well, it's owned, so you just have to stand there and watch it. But it's 112 Ocean Avenue in Amityville, New York. You know what that's
Ring
about?
Ring a bell?
It's got those little quarter moon windows.
Didn't they change the windows so people would stop coming by?
I think they did.
Yeah, I read that they, because they people, it was so distinctive with the windows that they changed the windows to try to keep people from stopping in front of the house and staring at stuff.
Yeah. Strange. I mean, like, not to change your windows out, but yeah, why would you buy a landmark of that,
yeah,
you know, like that, and then be bought, you know, it's like, oh, there's a bunch of people standing outside. But that's one of those that you just walk by. I don't think you'd really explore it too much, but yeah, it's a landmark, but it's also a murder house, because regardless of whether the Amityville Horror, the mass murders did occur there.
Yeah.
So, where are you headed?
Let's go back to Pennsylvania, to the Eastern State Penitentiary, a prison that was opened in 1829 and operated for about 150 years, before shutting down in the 1970s. More than a century, the prison housed the most brutal murderers, serial killers, and rapists the state had to offer. Kept them in harrowing conditions. You know, back then, prisons were prisons. There weren't, you know, a whole lot of prisoners' rights, advocates, or anything like that. When you went to prison, you were forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
There was no heat, no plumbing. They ate spoiled food. If the prisoner stepped out of line, the guards were all too happy to throw a little torture their way. Penitentiary is now a museum and full-time haunted house attraction. Visitors can still see ghostly shadows of long-since-deceased criminals roaming the halls. If they listen carefully, they hear the cries of tortured prisoners echoing through the cell block. You can imagine, we've done a show on asylums and stuff like that. You can imagine just the horrors that went on in there.
Mm-hmm.
And just that it's a bad place.
I wonder, like, how would you ever get comfortable in a place like that? Because, I mean, you know, it's like you get comfortable in your environment regardless. You know, there's a certain point at which you just kind of fit in. You know, it's like,
yeah,
you work for somebody, or you know, somebody's lackey, or somebody's prison bitch, or whatever. But it's like, but even then, you still hear the screaming all night. It's like, there's no way that could ever just be like
silenced.
Yeah, you get a good night's sleep in any way.
Actually, just reminded me of one of the movies that I saw for submissions for Texas Frightmare. It was a good one. I'll tell you about that one a little bit.
Cool. Well, I've been to this one quite a bit. I haven't seen any ghosts, but I've had quite a bit of spirits. But Lafitte's Blacksmith Shop in New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
It's like, I think, one of the oldest continuously running bars in...
I've been to Lafitte's before.
In the United States. And it's kind of off the path. Like, you kind of go into the gay district in order to get to Lafitte's, but... it's a cool place with that big old fireplace in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get to New Orleans soon.
I just need to get to Louisiana soon, man. It's been a while since I've been out to visit family and stuff. But you mentioned Lafitte, the property my mom grew up on. I think I've talked to you about this before. But it was family property where everybody pretty much had a house next to each other. It's where my grandfather grew up. And it's acres and acres and acres and acres of shit. And where the bayou runs through is a tributary of the main bayou, which was the Bayou Teche. And that was like a major waterway back in the day. And they say that Jean Lafitte buried treasure on that property. And when he buried the treasure on the property, what pirates would do is they would bury treasure and they would kill people at that site, bury them so the ghosts would keep people away from the treasure. And the stories that I heard growing up about the ghosts on the property, it was at the point where the last people that had tried looking for the treasure, I guess you could say, we always learned when we were young that one of them It was three people. One of them died. Two of them killed the third one, and the other two ended up in the asylum. They were taken away. And nobody in the family ever bothered with trying to find anything because of the haunted nature of the property. But my mom used to tell me stories about just ghosts that they would see. And I don't know. And the thing about it is, you hear all this stuff when you're a kid, so you don't know how true it is or not. But there's even talk that near one of the houses, blood started coming up from the ground. And they claimed that they tested the blood, and it was human blood that was actually seeping up from the ground and stuff. Yeah, there was all kind of crazy haunted stories about that area. But yeah, it was all behind Jean Lafitte, the famous pirate.
Pirates? You know, it's like, they weren't like they are in Disney movies.
Or in Somalia.
They're closer to that, though.
Yeah.
They were more like that than they are...
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Well, because if you look at what pirates wear in the Pirates of the Caribbean, they're wearing modified uniforms.
Yeah.
For the most part. Because a lot of them were sailors that were impressed from one ship to another, or got taken captive or hostage, or just said, fuck it. But they were all, a lot of them were just Navy men or merchants to begin with. But piracy was mean.
Oh, yeah. You know, ruthless, man.
It's robbery. It's straight up armed robbery and
murder.
Often case of murder.
Yeah.
They didn't sing songs and dance much, I doubt. It wasn't Pirates of Penzance, you know, that kind of stuff. And I think if there's going to be something guarding your treasure and it's a pirate, he's probably pretty pissed.
Yeah.
You know? And there's probably a reason. I mean, this gets into, obviously there's a reason because there's a fault line that runs beneath it. But Port Royal, the famous pirate, that's what all the pirate movies are based off of, is the Port Royal in Jamaica. That was this full-on city. It was a huge city. And it's been hit by earthquake and sunk twice. catastrophic death. Like, the whole city. It's like God struck it and just... wiped them out. They rebuilt. Wiped them out again, and then they didn't rebuild after that. But, it's pretty mean town there. The pirate port.
The pirates didn't play, man.
Nope. All right, let's see. This one's close to home, and I'm just kind of curious about it, but, the Houston Zoo is apparently haunted. I've gone to the Houston Zoo a lot. We have a season pass. We take the kids every few weeks, you know. But the Houston Zoo, haunted by the first zookeeper, a guy named Hans Nigel, who was shot by a park police officer for spying on some teens in a parked car. So, I don't know how that escalated from peeping Tom to
shoot first, ask questions later.
But apparently, Mr. Nigel wanders around the park looking for teenagers.
That's
to peep
interesting.
On. So
you don't think of the Houston Zoo as a haunted place?
No, but I mean, it's just as good as any.
Yeah,
I used to work in the Galleria. There was a haunt there. But it was one of those ones that you could have seen it a million times and not known, because it was a construction worker. So it was just this guy in a hard hat. but apparently this guy in a hard hat would just, walk the floor. And the only reason you could tell it was him was sometimes he'd be seen after hours. But he just, dude in a hard hat. But you're not going to look up there and see a dude in a hard hat just walking around being like, there's a ghost.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's not that out of place.
Yeah. Have you seen the face on the Methodist building down in Galveston?
No.
So, I didn't look it up. This was not for this. This is not a... this is just a place. And so I don't know the name of the guy or whatever, but Methodist Hospital in Galveston... One of the only—I didn't look up the story, so I'm not exactly sure. But somebody associated with the building, his face can be seen on the side. They've painted it. They've sandblasted it off. They've done all kinds of stuff to try to remove this face. And it only goes away for a day or two, and then it comes back. But it's there, and I've seen it. It's obviously, it's this dude's face.
Yeah.
And it's pretty straight. Like, it doesn't look like a piece of natural formation of the rock. It looks like a guy with a beard. Like, but speaking of Galveston, the Hotel Galvez.
Yes.
In Galveston. Specifically room 505, and apparently the whole fifth floor has activity in and out of the rooms, the hallways, knocking doors, doors opening and shutting, that kind of stuff. And since we're talking road trips, what's your next?
Well, there's a place called Resurrection Cemetery in Justice, Illinois. Apparently,
real quick.
Go ahead.
Notwithstanding the whole story of Christ and the resurrection, but given the current, like, just pop culture sensibility towards zombies, would you name your cemetery Resurrection Cemetery?
They probably never saw Return of the Living Dead or anything like that. Apparently, there's a story behind a ghost called Resurrection Mary. The story goes that Mary got into a fight with her boyfriend while dancing one night, stormed out, and while walking home was struck by a hit-and-run driver and killed, and she was buried in Resurrection Cemetery. It's kind of like the story of, what was the one from Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
Large Marge.
Large Marge. Ever since her death, numerous motorists driving along Archer Avenue in Justice have reported picking up a beautiful blonde hitchhiker, always asked to be led out in front of Resurrection Cemetery, at which point she promptly disappears. Become something of a local celebrity, and she's been the inspiration for countless other stories and legends. But this is where this is the original Resurrection Mary at Resurrection Cemetery in Illinois.
So many stories like that.
Yep. Large Marge.
Worst accident I ever seen. Well, I've told you my ghost story. One of them, anyway. The Bourbon Orleans Hotel in New Orleans. So we went there years ago. You know, my wife just price-lined it. It wasn't like it was... We didn't choose it because it was haunted or anything like that. That was my first time to ever go to New Orleans. So we go there, we park our car, you know, we valet the car, we go, you know, basically drop off our stuff and then hit the streets. And so we go down Bourbon, and, you know, I'm looking at all this stuff that I've never seen before, just the spectacle of New Orleans, the jazz and the gators and the voodoo dolls and all that stuff that it's kind of passé now because I've been there so often, but back then it was just like, holy shit, this is awesome. I have a couple holy hand grenades and get back up to the room and pass out. All night long, there's these kids playing in the freaking hallway, and they're running up and down, they're playing with the ball, and they're thumping around, and they're laughing and stuff, and I'm drunk as fuck, and I'm just like, dude, shut up your damn kids. Like, who's letting their kids play in the freaking hallway? It's 2 a.m. So, but every now and then, I'd like, you know, I'd open a door, but as soon as I'd open my door, I'd hear a door slam. So I couldn't tell where they were coming from. And then it would be all quiet, and I'd look up and down the hall, and close the door, go back to bed. A few minutes later, they'd start playing again. I'm like, I'm going to call the front desk, and I'm going to complain. Anyway, drunkenness takes over. I pass out. Wake up the next day. We go party again. Go home. Party's over. Couple months later, I'm hanging out, watching TV, and one of those Haunted America shows is on TV, and it's one of those with the low voice. It's like, if you're ever,
yeah, you know,
if you're ever in the Bourbon Orleans Hotel and you're on the fourth floor, you may hear the sound of children playing in the hallway. So I'm like, wait, what? And it's like, they interview the manager or stuff. They're talking about, like, you know, the cleaning woman. She's like, oh, yeah. It's like, people call all the time and complain about kids. And, you know, it's like, she's like, holy shit. I was sitting out there yelling. I was being pissed off at the ghost kids without even realizing it was ghost kids. Like, I wish I could have known that while I was up there, because then I would have been like, listen, baby, listen, it's the ghost kids. Instead, I'm like,
well, we're in New Orleans. You've heard of Delphine Lollery. She was one of the earliest, most prolific serial killers in the country. She was, by day, she appeared to be an upstanding member of New Orleans' social elite in the early 1800s. And by all accounts, she was a perfectly pleasant person as far as South societal standards went. But despite her genial outward appearance, she was an uncompromising sadist who brutalized and tortured dozens, if not hundreds, of slaves over the course of several decades at her mansion on Royal Street in the French Quarter. Mansion still stands and has become one of the biggest tourist destinations in New Orleans. People say they can still hear the screams of tortured slaves emanating from the attic, and more than one is reported seeing the portly ghost of Madame Delphine herself menacing visitors who trespass on her property. Did you know Nicolas Cage owned that house for a short time?
Oh, yeah?
Yep. He owned it for several years. He bought it several years ago, and now it's open to tourism and everything, but it's...
He doesn't own it anymore.
No. It has a very, very horrible history behind the home itself. And it's one of those places that there's so much evil has occurred that it's just stained.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
One of those things, whether you believe in it or not, you still want, like, it would be tough to live in some place like that.
Just, right.
You know? Well, that's about what I have on my list, man.
I think I'm good, too.
We're kind of cleaning up on time here. So, once again, guys, we're sorry about the mess up from last week.
It happens.
I mean, it wasn't anything really either one of us did. It was whenever I went to go mix the show, there would be words like you're hearing now, and then there would just be these long moments of no words, just complete cut off, and like this static, like this hum. Just like boom. So, it...
After 100 plus episodes, it's the second one that we've had to...
Yeah, so...
trash.
Didn't mean to throw off your scheduling. Sorry, Mr. Stitches. Sorry, Mr. Jordan. We know... we know how closely you follow us, but hopefully this does you one better. It is actually episode 111, Real Life Haunted Houses. Thank you so much for listening, and as always, keep it scary.
Later.